Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of our Tax Town Hall. Joe Bannister here. We also have Larry Beecraft. Gary Thomason, one of our co-hosts, should join us shortly. Sean O'Connor, the other co-host, can't be with us this evening. So let's start as we always do with a prayer to our Father in heaven. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. All right, well tonight Larry is gonna teach us a little bit about the PRA and some other OMB numbers and stuff like that. So Larry, why don't you go ahead and take it away?
Will do. Thank you, Joe. You know, when you're dealing with legal topics, it is best to learn a field here and a field there. And as you gain proficiency and understanding in a particular field, you know, then that widens your knowledge, certainly. But, you know, but you begin to use one field of knowledge as a kind of a buttress for another field of knowledge. So, you know, law is learning segments at one step at a time. And imagine building a wall, you know, each brick is a separate little topic. You know, law is kind of like a brick wall. You know, you got to build up the wall with a whole bunch of separate little blocks. Now that's my approach to trying to teach people about law. You know, too many people want to come in the freedom movement. Too many people just simply want, well, just tell me the answer. Just tell me the answer. Just tell me the answer. That's all I want to know. And instead of trying to learn a little something about the law. Now, one of the topics I want to cover tonight deals with the Federal Register. What it is, how it came about, what's the history behind it? And once you know a little something about the history, you know, just simply being told, oh, there's this thing known as the Federal Register, and giving you a few little points about it, you know, knowing a couple of little points really doesn't educate you. But I find that once you understand something about the reason, the foundation, the history behind something, it's a whole lot more understandable. You know something about that field of law. So one of the topics I want to cover tonight deals with, you know, what is the Federal Register? How did it come about? It's a separate field of law. It's related to the Administrative Procedures Act. Now, another separate, distinct field of law is a legal topic, rather, is the Paperwork Reduction Act. So those are the two things I want to educate our listeners about tonight. And then I don't know how long it's going to take, you know, whenever I finish, you know, I guess we can open up the field for questions. But let me just start off with this Federal Register issue is simply stating it's the Federal Register is nothing more than the newspaper for the federal government. But it wasn't started until 1936. So before that time, how did people know something about the law? How did people know something about, you know, what agencies required? Well, that, you know, that's kind of a separate topic, but it is definitely related to, you know, this broad topic known as the Federal Register. You know, when Congress went into session in the 1790s, it started passing one law right after the other. And if you go over to my website, now, Joe, can you back out of this page right here? And go over to the, you know, my website. You can see it's got an odd URL at the top. And the way you would find my website is to use an internet search engine, type in Beecraft Briefs or Dixieland Law Journal, which is the name of my website. You hit it, Joe. That's correct. Yeah, when you do use the search term Beecraft Briefs, there's always underwear ahead of you. But Joe, go down here to constitutional and other legal materials. Now, click on that second topic, primary sources of statutory law. Now go on down until you start seeing, you know, the statutes at large, the links. There you go. That's good. That's good. So when Congress first started meeting, you know, we didn't have a thing at that time known as the statutes at large. The statutes at large didn't get started until 1845. But, you know, but Congress was, from day one, passing laws when it is first session. You know, if you pull up the statutes at large and take a look at the first act of Congress, it related to notaries. Well, that kind of makes sense. You know, why wouldn't the first act of the legislative body deal with notaries? It's kind of important, you know, because you're going to have to, you know, get oaths for just the government officials. But Joe, click on volume one of the statutes at large. And let's take a look at it. Now, it may take a few minutes because there's probably about 400 or 500 pages in this volume. But, you know, when Congress came along and started passing its first laws, you know, they would be sent over to the Secretary of State's office for permanent archiving. But then back in those days, they had various ways. They would publish the laws in newspapers. And then you also had some private law publishers that would publish them. But Congress was using a company called Byron and Duane to come out with these official prints of the laws enacted by Congress. So here you got the statutes at large. Now, statutes at large didn't get started until 1845. And before that time, there was a separate way for the Congress to publish the laws of the United States. Now, Joe, go down to maybe about page 50, because that, you know, you got a whole bunch of introductory pages in this volume one of the statutes at large. Okay, see, so you have, you know, there's some of the old volumes of the statutes large. Justice Story was printing them. They had a book called Laws of the United States. But go on down until we, you know, until we see an act of Congress, that first act of Congress dealing with. Keep on going. Ah, now we got the table of contents. And let's go down to the first one right after that. Yeah, I don't know what the page number is going to be. Go down to maybe about 80 on the page counter. Oh, maybe we're coming up on it. No.
Further?
Yeah. Well, hey, let's just go on down until we see that first act of Congress. Keep on going. Now, while we're going through here, you know, we're page 103, 104 into this volume. And you can see we're just now getting into the table of contents, because they had things like this, the Constitution and advertisements and letters, you know, in this first volume. So it was different from the other volumes, because usually in the volumes after this, you know, they just start off with the table of contents and boom, then they get into the acts. Declaration of Independence. Keep on going down, Joe. Hey, let's maybe go down to page 150. See where that puts us. Ah, okay. We'll go back up maybe page 140. Now here's an act. Here's probably the second act of Congress, which was the Tax Act. Yeah, keep on going. Maybe the next. But yeah, this looks like we're almost right here. Okay, so in the statutes at large, the first act of Congress that you'll find in volume one, page, you know, so the page counter on the screen is 144. But it'll be one stat. What is this? Page 29 or something like that. But anyway, you can read this and you can see it deals with the notaries and oaths of office on page 23. Okay. Now go down to the next page. And here you can see the way Congress passes these laws are just, you know, they're not in any particular order. You know, they're not related to subject matter. So here's the first law that deals with, you know, oaths and notaries. And then the second act, which is also important for a new government, taxes. And so that's the second act that, you know, and look at the date, July 4th, 1789. So you have basically the only law at the federal level and typically at the state level, you know, prior to the Civil War, it was just the acts of a legislative body at the federal government level, it would be Congress, or at the state level, it would be your state legislative assembly or, the legislature. So each legislative body, when they enact laws, they publish them in books like this. This is the United States Statutes at Large, which is the place where the laws are first published. And then later on, you know, we can get into a study, a discussion of, well, what is the United States Code? The United States Code is really just all of the United States statutes large, all of the laws that are currently in existence, you know, the ones that are in effect, organized by subject matter. Now, Joe, let's back out of this. Now that we've introduced our listeners to, you know, the statutes large, all the way up through the Civil War, you know, really the law was just what was appeared in these acts of the legislative assemblies, you know, act of the state legislature, acts of Congress. And it's only after the Civil War do you begin to get into, at least at the federal level, you know, things known as regulations. So for the Internal Revenue Service or the Treasury Department, you know, since there was a great expansion of the revenue of the federal government as a result of the Civil War. You know, if you take a look at the, you know, you can go over to it. I have links on my websites to where you can download the annual reports of the Secretary of the Treasury. And when you download the annual reports of the Secretary of the Treasury, you can see that before the Civil War, you know, Congress and the federal budget was kind of limited. But as a result of the Civil War, there was greatly increased revenue needs for the funding of the war, but it really didn't drop after the war. And Congress kept expanding, you know, the number of agencies and the things that the federal government was doing. So as that growth happened, there became a need for, you know, the heads of offices in Washington, D.C. You know, by the 1880s, you have Department of Labor, you have a Department of Commerce, you have, you know, a Department of the Interior. You know, Department of the Interior has got, you know, lands all the way out in, you know, Nevada and Utah and, you know, South Dakota. There's a whole lot of land that has to be administered by an agency whose main office is in Washington, D.C. So they had various ways, you know, the agencies would come up with ways to communicate the head office in D.C. with the agents in the field. Now, in reference to Treasury, there were certain things like there was a thing known as the Internal Revenue Bulletin. It was kind of like a newspaper. It came out once a week. And, you know, everything that was one way that, you know, the information, the regulations, the directives that were coming out of Washington was communicated to the field. But as things kind of grew, you know, by the time you get up in the 1890, 1891, you know, the Treasury Department is big, employs a lot of people. It's strung out everywhere. Its main office is in Washington, D.C., but it has, you know, it has these offices all around the country. It's got offices in San Francisco. It's got offices in Los Angeles. You know, those are ports of entry. You know, they have them all the way up to Maine, all the way down to Florida, all the way over to New Orleans, then out on the West Coast. So how in the world is the Treasury Department going to communicate in the field? Well, they had these various publications. And that was one way by which the information from Washington, D.C. was transmitted to the agents in the field. But then also about this same time, you know, in the late 1890s, you know, Congress was beginning to see the way that agencies were operating kind of on a de facto basis. And they began to see that, you know, there was a kind of a field of law, especially for the Treasury Department. But, you know, by now you had big old thick books. You know, you can go into your law libraries and see these big thick books published by the Treasury Department that just related to customs and tariffs. you know, so there's a lot of printed information, a lot of floating around. So Congress came along with the idea, well, we're going to start delegating to these legislative heads of these departments, you know, the authority to, you know, enact regulations. And so that that's something that happened about in the 1890s. So about that time, you know, you can't see it, but I have up on my, in my library here in my office, you know, I've got the Internal Revenue cumulative bulletins, and I've got the Treasury decisions, Internal Revenue. And, you know, imagine the bookshelf is about that long, you know, maybe about, it's more than a yard long. And I got about a row and a half of books just for the income tax laws, income tax regulations that were in effect between 1898 and 1940. And there looks like there's about maybe, you know, 50 volumes there. But, you know, if you went into a law library, you know, there would be tons and tons of other Treasury publications relating to tariffs and, you know, but things other than Internal Revenue. So you have, by the time that you get into the late 1890s and early 1900s and, you know, 19-teens, 20s and 30s, you have a lot of information that is being promulgated and published by the Treasury Department. So that was the way that, you know, information got passed from the head office to the people that work for the agencies in the field. But what about the people? Well, the agencies like the Treasury Department, you know, since typically the Secretary of the Treasury was given authority to promulgate regulations, you know, the regulations really start off as being directives from the heads of the agencies in Washington, D.C. to tell the people in the field about how they were to interpret a particular law. That's the way a lot of these regulations started out. You know, they weren't considered, since an agency could not enact law, you know, only Congress could do that. You know, the regulations weren't given, you know, an imprimatur of having some force and effect of law. So the agencies would, you know, particularly the Treasury Department, you know, occasionally the Treasury Department would come along and publish whole sets of regulations for various topics. You know, like back in those days, regulations one related to assessments. Joe, let's see if we can find, click on taxation. Okay, now see down there, it says Treasury Publications. Now here you've got, you know, the annual reports of the Secretary of the Treasury. You've got links to all of them right here, and you can download them all. Now go down the page, you know, because we'll get into, those are the annual reports of the Secretary of the Treasury, Commissioner of Internal Revenue reports. You know, you can see that they, you know, I've got links for them all the way back to 1864. Then here's the Internal Revenue record that I was talking about, which was a newspaper. You know, you can download one of these, say like volume one, 1865, synopsis of sundry decisions of the Treasury Department. You know, they're on there. So you begin to see, you know, by taking a look at these volumes, you can begin to see how the printed material interpretations of the Treasury laws, you know, the laws and for taxation at the federal level, you know, what they looked like in the old days. Now let's get around to the Federal Register. You know, in addition to the Treasury Department having these rules and regulations, this vast agency literature related to the enforcement of a law that an agency was charged with administering, you know, that body of paperwork, that body of publications, you know, the way that somebody in America would, back in those days, would find out about it, you would have to write off, say, like to the Treasury Department. You'd have to write off the Treasury Department, the Bureau of Internal Revenue, and say, hey, you know, I want regulations 33. You know, I think some of them, regulations 33, a set of regulations, something like 50 cents is what you'd send to them to get a set of regulations. So you have, before 1935, you have, as you can see, we've shown a little bit by that link on the Treasury publication, you know, there's quite a field. You know, after the Civil War, there was quite a field of printed material published by these agencies that related to the laws that they interpreted, you know, how they were going to be enforced. And there was a lot of printed material. Congress decided in 1935 that there had to be a way to organize all of this literature that was being printed by all of these government agencies. So they came up with the idea of coming up with a daily newspaper to be called the Federal Register. So Congress passes this law, went into effect March of 1936. This law said all agency regulations have to first be published in this central newspaper known as the Federal Register. Now, Joe, I sent you a link, and the beginning of the link says LOC. It goes to the Library of Congress. I want to show our listeners, you know, what you years ago, you know, I would say within the last 4 or 5 years, the Library of Congress has finally gotten around to, you know, making available to the public issues of the Federal Register. Now, I see that Mr. Gary Thomason has finally arrived. Now, he and I used to go to law libraries and download whole volumes, you know, from Hine Online, whole volumes of the Federal Register so we could get it organized.
Every one of them.
What?
Every one of them.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that was in Memphis.
Yeah, yeah. And the University of Memphis's law library is now in the old federal courthouse. It's a grand old building.
I thought it was the post office.
Yeah, Well, the federal courts was also in there. By the 60s, they moved down the block to that big, tall, black building.
And that law library is beautiful.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. But Joe, can you see that link I sent to you that said LOC?
You know, I got the APA brief. Is that the?
No. I sent you a link because that's a link to the page where you can pull up, you know, the annual daily volumes of the Federal Register.
I don't see that link, Larry. I see there
I sent you about three different emails. Check all of the emails.
Unless it's something you sent me right at the last minute.
So, no, well, it wasn't with the others. You know, I had to go find the link. But I do think it's real important for our participants in this evening's education symposium for them to take a look at the Federal Register. Now, what the Federal Register is, you know, it started out in March of 1936. And what we have today, you know, back in those days, you know, come out, but there was not but about maybe 4 or 5 pages in that first issue. But over time, you know, as more agency regulations began to grow in volume, you know, the daily issues of the Federal Register got to be longer and longer and longer. Now, for research purposes, I have strung together, you know, everything that was published in 1936, I've got it in one volume, in one file on my hard drive. And then up to probably about into the early 1940s, the whole year is one file. It's word searchable. But then by the time you get into World War II, you know, the issues, the daily issues of the Federal Register keep getting longer and longer and longer. You know, so, you know, by that time, when I get into the 40s, it takes about 3 separate files to contain all of the 240 issues of the Federal Register in any one given year. So, Joe, did you find it?
I think I found it.
Okay.
Let me just share it. Pulled up.
And Mike just sent a link through the chat, too, guys.
Did he find it? Yeah, okay, now it's on the screen. Now, you know, here over here at the Library of Congress, you know, we can pull up, this happens to be 1963. I just, you know, pulled pull the first link. Now, what you will do, you know, to get the earlier issues, hey, Joe, go down the page some, and over on the left, about the bottom side of the screen. Okay, see, part of, you know, this Library of Congress website makes available all daily editions of the Federal Register. And it's just one day at a time. But, you know, they're not organized. You know, the computer will pull up, for each year, it'll pull it up, but it'll not be in a numerical chronological sequence. You know, you can see here, like, it'll have March of 1963. It'll go, and see, it jumps down to January of 1963. But, you know, there'll be about 240 issues in any given year of the Federal Register. And after you download it, you know, they're at least organized by year. So, you know, you can download everything for a particular year. And once you download all of them, you'll have all the daily issues. But the way you'll find the, you know, the separate volumes, you got to see over here on the left side of the screen, it says part of Federal Register. You know, you can see volume 8, volume 9, volume 7, volume 24. They're not in any particular order because that's the way the computer is. You know, so they don't list them in numerical order. But if you want more, click on more parts of down here at the bottom, and that'll carry you over to that the page for more volumes of the Federal Register. See, they're not in any particular order. It's not chronological or numerical in order. But, you know, like if you wanted to pull up volume 14 of the Federal Register, that would be about 1950. You can pull that up and you'll have access to all of the daily editions, and you can download them. So now we have the Federal Register. It's online. Anybody in the world, you know, only within this came up probably in the last 3 years. It was made available on the Library of Congress website. And they're also finally getting around to providing the Code of Federal Regulations all the way back to 1936 or 1938. So this basically is an explanation of the background of how agencies had these unorganized publications made available to the public, and the first attempt to organize the information that federal agencies publish comes about by means of the Federal Register Act of 1936. Then in 1938, Congress comes along and passes a law that says, okay, now that we've got these agencies in the habit of first publishing all of their regulations in one central spot, now we're going to require that the agencies codify their regulations. So any agency's existing regulations have to be published in a particular title, and that 1938 Act created the titles of the Code of Federal Regulations. So the Treasury Department had two titles, Title 26 and Title 27, also Title 31, which would be the Treasury Department itself. The 26 was the Internal Revenue Laws, and Title 27 was BATF laws, and Title 31 was other Treasury regulations. So the Treasury Department had basically three titles. And the titles of the Code of Federal Regulations also corresponded to the titles in the United States Code. So let's get around to talking about the organization of the Federal Register. When Congress came along and created the Federal Register Act, all the agencies had to publish their regulations first there. By 1938, Congress says, okay, now that we got you doing that, we want to create these titles. And now you agencies are going to have to codify all of your existing regulations that are currently in effect in any one given year. They got to be published in a title. So that was the next way of organizing agency information that was kind of centralized.